Welcome to the Voice of the Winged Ox, the official podcast of St. Luke's Episcopal Church in Jamestown, New York. I'm your host, Rev Merrill, bringing you This I Believe. In today's world, many of the conflicts we see are shaped, at least in part, by religion. Differences between religions, and even within religions, cause a variety of problems at home and abroad. Here at St. Luke's, we are exploring our own core beliefs as Christians and Episcopalians. Listen in as we ask ourselves how our beliefs shape our values and our actions. In this podcast, we will hear from a variety of people about the intersection of their faith and life. Today's presenter is Jay Philippi, youth missioner for the Episcopal Diocese of Western New York and member of St. Luke's.
I'm Jay Philippi. I don't think that comes as a surprise to anybody in the room, but for the people on the tape, they may not know that. When Father Eric asked me to do this, it was, when people ask me what I do, I say that I'm a minister of the gospel, that I am called to a ministry, that I'm out teaching young people about their faith. So the question of, this I believe should be easy. It was interesting to try and distill it down. Fortunately for me, there are a couple of concepts that I have been thinking about over the last couple of years. And so I decided to focus on them since I'd done a lot of the spade work on that. What it comes down to is, what do I believe in? I believe in mystery, and I believe in simplicity. Mystery, for me, is that which I cannot know, not that which I do not know. There's a lot of things I do not know. I do not understand string theory in physics. I do not understand accounting practices. I think it's probably possible that I could understand string theory. I'm not sure it's possible for me to understand accounting practices. But there is a category of things as I've gone through a life in faith that I've realized that I just do not believe that I'm capable of wrapping my brain around. I was reading a book recently that was talking about scientific modeling, in which you try and understand a larger system by creating a smaller model that's controllable and that you can function with. And they said, unfortunately, depending on how detailed you want your understanding of that system to be, the more detailed your understanding you want to be, the larger the model tends to be. And that there are some systems that are simply, in order to understand them, the only workable model is the thing itself. The only way to truly understand the universe at a small detail requires a model the size of the universe. And we're not capable of wrapping our mind around something like that. I don't believe that we're capable of wrapping our mind around the nature of God. I'm a small, limited, flawed, imperfect human being. And consequently, I'm faced with an infinite, perfect being. And that creates the difficulty. And I can continue to try and batter my head against those concepts. Or I can accept that there is a thing called mystery in the universe. And mystery is something that I simply can't understand and have to accept at whatever level of understanding I have. I was cleaning my office at the end of the week, and I keep a book of quotations. If I find a quotation that I like that speaks to me, I write it down, because I have the world's worst memory for virtually everything, as my wife will certainly reinforced. Albert Einstein said, life is a mystery to be lived, not a problem to be solved. And that, I guess, is how I approach mystery in the religious sense, in the faith-filled sense. It is something to be lived into. I live into this mystery, not understanding what's going on or why it happens or how it happens, but just sort of making my way through. Now, mystery has become important to me. Mystery is not something that's been with me all of my life. My understanding and my acceptance of mystery has probably only taken place in the last 2 or 3 years. Mystery is important to me, I've come to realize as I sat thinking about this day and this presentation, because as it relates to ego. And I'm sure you were all stunned to discover that I have an ego, let alone that perhaps I have an ego problem. But mystery attacks ego because it requires ego to admit there's something it cannot do. Raised in our society, raised in our times, we are in a time period, have been in a time period where we have believed that we could figure it out. And I think I'm a pretty smart guy, and pretty smart guys figure things out. Well, mystery forces ego to take that step back and say, you know what? You're not that smart. So mystery for me helps me control that aspect that's so very impressed with myself some days. Because I realize as I look at mystery that I have become suspicious over the years of people who want to state categorically, God does this, God won't do that, God can't do this. They're claiming, to my understanding, they're claiming a much more profound understanding of the mystery of God and God's mind than I believe we are capable of. It also strikes me that very often when we start to do that, what we're really saying is that we really are requiring God to work things out the way we work things out. And that violates, that's when my mystery sensor kind of goes off too. Because I think we've overstepped our bounds. Mystery means, obviously, therefore, that I must question what I believe. There, mystery is this constant, ongoing question. So, for some people, they're very uncomfortable when I place mystery as a central belief. But for mystery, it's not so much a matter of questioning everything to the point where you don't believe in anything, but rather that it requires me to be careful about what I say I believe. And so it limits the scope for me a little bit because there's only a limited number of things that I can feel any level of confidence in saying I believe. So when I say that I believe in saying things, it's something that I've worked through. It's something that I've tried to think about, tried to find some sort of solid ground for me. It also means that having decided this I believe, I must also leave the door open for the possibility. I could be wrong. And that's a very uncomfortable place for a lot of people to be. It's a very uncomfortable place for me to be some days, particularly when I run up against fellow believers who are much more certain, for whom the realm of mystery is much smaller than I am. The possibility is that they could convince me that I was wrong. Mystery requires that that door be left open. But there's enough of my ego left that if you're going to convince me, you're going to have to be as committed to what you believe and the structure that supports that belief as I am. The Talmud said, this was another quote that I found in my little book, "We do not see things as they are. We see things as we are." And that to me is also a warning. That to me is also a reminder that there is mystery there. That who I am at 49 and just over a half years of age and having been raised where I was by the people that I was and having experienced the things that I've experienced, it creates a way of judging the world, of looking at the world and seeing the things that are there. And since I remind myself that I am a limited, imperfect person, it reminds me that I need to be careful about the judgments that I make. because I see things not as they are, but as I am. I was very interested. A couple of years ago, I was on an online forum for Christian youth ministers. And we got into basically the same discussion, and it was at the beginning of the point where I was really starting to invest heavily in my belief in mystery. And so I made some short, you know, you don't type for great long things on most of these forums. I made some short statement about my belief in mystery, and I had a regular, someone that I had gotten to know, come back to me and say, "That's a cop-out. I'm really tired of all of you people who keep touting mystery, because you're just quitting." And I kind of went, okay, that was not on the expected list of responses I was going to get. He believed, as we went on, that there was probably mystery out there, but it was a very small fraction. That everything else in our life of faith was something that could be defined and nailed down. And what I thought was very interesting was that I am a moderately liberal Christian, theologically. This guy was a moderately to slightly beyond moderately conservative Christian. And I was talking about the infinity of God, and he was taking this very sort of enlightenment point of view, that the scientific point of view, something that I'm sure he would reject in most other things that he talked about. But he was taking this point of view that everything was much more definable than I was. And I just thought it was interesting that the two of us found ourselves at sort of opposite ends from where we would be. For me, mystery isn't about quitting. It is about the challenge to understand. It is the challenge to comprehend that which I am capable of comprehending. Because mystery doesn't cover everything. But if I'm faced with a subject so complex that I am forced to accept mystery, how do I deal with it? And that brings me to the concept of simplicity. My process, as I look and to try and understand, is to try and find what in my head I refer to as the kernel. And the kernel for me is that central portion of a seed. It's the center. It's the pit. It's the when you trim everything else away, you're left with what's at the center, the essence, at its simplest form. And if I can find that, sometimes I do and sometimes I don't, but if I can find that, I've found that I'm usually in a better place to begin trying to understand the stuff that may surround that. The goal is not to stop there at that center kernel of truth. The goal is to create a place from which I feel I can, with some confidence, explore the concepts that surround it. In simplicity, I'm seeking the best that I am capable of understanding. Again, mystery is always lurking there, leaving that door open that I may be wrong. As complexity increases, mystery brings more uncertainty into the process. And that's why I search for simplicity. I have to find the place to stand. Let me give you an example of how I did this. And if there's anyone here of a particularly Anglo-Catholic theological, this may push some of your buttons, and I would only ask that you listen to me the whole way through. The Nicene Creed is something that we have all repeated many, many times in our lives. It is a basic statement of faith, and it is a basic statement of faith that some Christians in the modern day world find portions of it to be a little difficult. They stumble over pieces here and there. And so I began looking at some of the more common places to stumble, to try and figure out why they stumble and what was really there. And the one I started with, for reasons that I cannot explain to you, but it's where I began, was conceived by the Holy Spirit and born of the Virgin Mary. The Virgin Mary. And this is what our Anglo-Catholic friends are going to go, "Rah!" Was Mary a virgin? Don't know. The honest answer is, I don't know. There are no gynecological reports in Scripture. Looking back on what I understand of the society at that time, I find it very difficult to believe, figuring that we talk about Mary becoming Jesus' mother at 15, maybe a couple years before, maybe a couple years after. 15 seems to be a fair ballpark figure. Jesus begins his ministry at about 30. So we are talking about a 45-year-old woman at the time that Jesus begins his ministry and rises to where people are paying attention to him, and everything grows from there. The concept of a first century 45-year-old Jewish woman describing her physical condition at the time of the birth of her first child with anyone else strikes me as highly unlikely. So, what are we left with? We're left with something that we have felt is important for thousands of years in our practice as a Christian. And I'm left with trying to find what the kernel is. So I don't know about Mary. Here's what I do think I know. This is what I believe I know. I believe that I know that God, for reasons that fall within the veil of mystery, required a human mother for the Messiah. That seems pretty clear. And that God chose a young woman named Mary. That seems pretty clear. And that whatever qualities he required of that human female, Mary possessed. For me, that's the kernel truth. I don't know what those qualities may or may not have been. I know the ones that we traditionally assign to her, but I'm not going to get, and this probably started because of a huge argument in one of the communities online that I'm a member of, a huge argument about this question. And there was so much anger, and there was so much energy, and there was so much stuff being pumped out. It's kind of like, all right, I need to know where I stand. So here's where I stand. Whatever God required, Mary had. And that really ought to be good enough for me. The rest of that, the longer I look at it, the less I believe it's necessary to make that a hard, nailed down, we're going to write this, we're not just going to write this on the board where it can be erased, we're going to chisel this into the rock of the church. And so that's what I do. That's the simplicity that I'm looking for. The simple kernel truth at the bottom that I can build a larger framework of faith in. Now, how do these affect me? Well, as I said, mystery affects me because it allows me a leash on ego. And that leash on ego helps me to at least try and walk humbly. I've been trying to think of it. I think it's in Micah, to serve, seek truth, serve justice, and
justice, love mercy, and walk humbly.
And walk humbly with your Lord, with your God. Mystery helps me to try and walk humbly with my God. That's been a hard thing for me. Humble is not a place I started in. She'll tell you that. So mystery helps me there. Simplicity helps me hone the complex issues into something that this imperfect, limited brain can handle. Because we've had 2,000 years of people embroidering. Father Eric and Mother Susan got to spend probably years studying the deep and arcane thoughts of some of the early fathers and the theologians of the church, and simplicity is not something most of them seem to be heavily invested in. And I'm not saying that what they did doesn't have huge value. I'm just saying that I find it difficult to start at the deep end of the pool. And so simplicity allows me to bring it back down to a starting point that maybe someday I'll get to where the big thinkers are. Maybe I'll discover I don't need to go where the big thinkers are. Because as I look at simplicity, I realize that we've got several places where it's been simplified for us. We do all this fancy stuff. But if you go back and look, Jesus made it very simple. They came to him one day and they said, Lord, what is the greatest of all the laws? love God. And then I love the second part of it. And the second is, I learned it from the King James Version, so I always hear, and the second is like unto it. Love your neighbor as yourself. But it's the third section. We always hear those first two. There's a third phrase in this conversation that my simplicity thing just goes, see, it's right there. On these two, everything else comes off of that. On these two hang all the law and all the prophets. All that other stuff is great, but you know what? It all grows from this little kernel. Love God and love one another. That's a simple truth. That's a starting place for me as I try to explore where the boundaries of mystery are. And I promise that you should never give a storyteller an audience, because we tend to just go off. So I tried to be very disciplined and get to where I wanted to be in time so that we would have time to talk about it. And that there's nothing. I always hate it when I have to go do something. If I'm reading or something and I'm enjoying the conversation, I have to leave. So those are those are the basics. Those are the foundations of my belief as it stands right here, right now. They would not have even made the list 10 years ago. They may not be on the list 10 years from now. But I don't live then, and I don't live then, either future or past. I live now. And this is what I believe now. Thank you.
You can send us email at thewingedox@gmail.com, call our comment line at 206-203-3904, or visit us online at thewingedox.blogspot.com. For the Voice of the Winged Ox, I'm Rev Merrill. May God bless your week.